Nebuchadnezzar, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, the world empire, came out of his field. No, he didn't. I misspoke. Excuse me. He crawled out of his field, and he uttered something that few Christians today can utter, or will utter, or know to utter. I'm not talking about a cow's udder, even though Nebuchadnezzar was wandering around in the field with cows and their udders. Utterly fantastic. Good morning, everyone. This is Martin Zender at Broward College. This will be my last broadcast from Broward College. I will be broadcasting from my home studio in Winburn, Pennsylvania. Thank you for joining me here. It has been lovely accommodations. Thank you to my hostess here, Kate Horn, Professor Kate Horn. She is the department head here, Associate Dean Kate Horn, and her hospitality has been marvelous. Everyone here has been so good to me and so accommodating because they don't know what I'm doing, hence the shades. But I'm starting to dig these shades. I like how I look in them. I might just keep wearing them because they're illustrative of a higher truth. And we all want that. We all want higher truth. So we're going to dabble into Romans 13 here. And we're leaving Nebuchadnezzar out there, but we're preempting him a little bit because we're going to find things out the easy way. I told you that Paul tells us things and we simply believe them. And it's a lot easier than being cast out into a field naked and be insane for 7 years. I guess that would be a benefit for some people to only be insane for 7 years. Some people, however, have been Christians for many more years than that, so their insanity has been protracted. They believe in eternal torment and all those things. That's insane teaching. So, but concerning the subjection of the earth and the control of the earth, God gives it to whom he will. Oop, I'm preempting our revelation from Nebuchadnezzar. He gives it to whom he will, and who are we? How dare you to say that God's plans have been superseded by man's and that there is something or someone in office that has undone his intention. Who can withstand his intention? There's a great question that Paul poses in Romans chapter 9. Let me give you a little clue as to the answer. Nobody. All right, I told you a couple weeks ago how to really damage your enemies. Oops, wait a minute, that's not it. How to bless your enemies, but ultimately pour burning coals upon their head. I thought that was a great truth that the other week. I really helped myself with that one. That even while you're blessing your enemies, you know, it's going to make them feel bad. Well, that's your ultimate motive. I'm going to make my enemy feel bad. I'm going to put burning coals on his or her head. In other words, my grace in the face of their treachery is going to make an impression on them, and they're going to squirm a little bit because they're going to feel like, oh my God, this person's so nice and they make me feel bad. But the end result is going to be that they're going to eventually come back to you and say, you know, you were right all along. I was a moron, but I didn't realize it until you were nice to me. Because if you had been mean to me and if you had come after me and hammered me and punched me, then it just would have hardened me against you. But Proverbs says, a soft answer turns away wrath. My dad used to teach me this while we were playing ping pong. I loved my dad and my mom. They were fantastic people. They're both dead, damn it. You know, but I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I'd love to see them again. And they were really good to me. And they loved me and just taught me card tricks, played catch with me. Even my mom, she played tackle football with us. And they're just wonderful people. And my dad was playing ping pong with me one night after dinner. And he said, well, I'm at the car dealership and people are mad at me and they think they're getting a bad deal or something went wrong with their car, and they come back and they're very animated and aggravated. He goes, I just talk to them very softly. The louder their voice gets, the softer my voice gets. And I remember we're batting the ball back and forth, and he's teaching me this. The louder their voice gets, the softer my voice gets. And eventually their voice gets softer and softer. I'll never forget this. My dad knew nothing of the Proverbs. And yet, he had that inherent wisdom to know that a soft answer turns away wrath. So this is why you're good to your enemies. This is why when your enemy is hungry, you give them the morsel. When they're thirsting, you give them the drink. For in doing this, you will be heaping embers of fire on his head. That's what my dad did to those poor people who are in the market for a car. Heaped fire on their head. And they eventually saw the error of their ways on the spot and weren't so mean to him. How could anybody be mean to my dad? Ugh. Be not conquered by evil, but conquer evil with good. Let every soul be subject to the superior authorities. You may have heard me teach on this before. I taught on this several years ago at a conference in South Carolina, in Sacramento, and I think I taught on it in South Carolina too back in the 90s. The thing is, it's still truth, and it applies. It's a secret in Daniel. Again, one of the secrets in Daniel is to realize that God gives the earth to the people he wants to give it to, and it's not always the most capable individual. Sometimes it is, in the case of Nebuchadnezzar, but when it's time for the house of cards to fall, God puts the earth in the hands of numbnuts and incompetence, and that's what we have today. And so it's a happy thing to see. You should be happy. Happy. You should be happy that God is putting the earth under the administration of incompetence, because that means we're near the end. In this era, it does. Now, wait a minute. Let me rethink this. I think I told you something wrong. Hang on. All right. I think we're still one step away. Because the incompetence is to become a catalyst to bring the ultimate competence. But the ultimate competence will itself be incompetence in the sense that it will be a nearer truth. It will be a falsification, an imitation of the kingdom that Christ is going to build. Did you get that? I built something there. I just built something there with my bare hands. I'm going to try to do that again, slower this time. We need a catalyst to produce the kind of government that's going to be the epic false government. And as I've been saying, the epic false government has to be one which supplies the needs, like Nebuchadnezzar's, a good government, all right? We don't have that now. But human beings, being the way they are, they need pushed. They need shoved. And so as a knee-jerk reaction to the communist-leaning government that brings nothing but slavery and dirt to the subjects while they themselves flourish in their palaces, the feudal-type systems, communism, i.e., without that, you're not going to have the people who want to oppose it. In other words, in our day, you won't have the Tea Party. And let's go back to the American Revolution. You won't have the American Revolution unless you have overtaxed people, taxation without representation. You have to have some kind of crappy deal going on to inspire you to overcome it. Now, I'm not saying that when the beautiful end time government overtakes the crap pile we have now, I'm not saying that it's going to be of God, relatively. Ultimately, it's going to be of God, but relatively, it's going to be of Satan. But as I've been saying, Satan is a messenger of light, not darkness. So that makes me think, follow me, that the end time government is going to be light. But those who will bring the light must be prodded to do it. They have to kick against something. And so in order for that to happen, that's why I say I think we're one step removed. What is being set up now is the catalyst government. The government that's going to get so bad and bring us to poverty, then it's going to bring the Superman. Kind of like what Hitler faced, right? In the 1920, whatever, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, somewhere around that era. Let's just call it the 20th century, shall we? When there's barely food, when things are so bad economically that people are, you know, breaking off pieces of their own house to burn to stay warm, then you have the field set for the rising of a Superman. That's going to be the man of lawlessness. That's the real deception. Again, I go back to the thing, why is Obama not the Antichrist? Because the Antichrist is going to be likable. Because the Antichrist is going to be smooth. Antichrist won't need a teleprompter. So that, let that be an introduction. Romans chapter 13, and really Romans chapter 13, I'm not going to take point for point here, but the superior authorities in any administration are set by God. This is going to cause you to rest and relax in whatever administration you are. Now, there are some governments better than others, but let this be a jumping off point as we get into this. Be not conquered by evil. This is Paul's whole point in Romans chapter 12, not to be conquered by evil, but conquer evil with good. That's why you bake cookies for your enemy and you give those among your enemies who are thirsting a drink. An adult beverage, better yet. Now, Paul says at the end that the problem is we have a chapter heading here that doesn't belong here. That's chapter 13. Get rid of it. Erase it in your mind. Because when Paul wrote Romans, he didn't put chapter headings in there. That's man-made. Paul says in Romans 12:31, be not conquered by evil, but conquer evil with good. And then the very next sentence is, let every soul be subject to the superior authorities. In that context, based on the verse that went before it, the superior authority is evil, because Paul is giving an example of how to conquer evil with good. Paul says, conquer evil with good. How do I do that, Paul? Be subject to these superior authorities. That's how. If you want to conquer evil with good, I have a great way to do it, that you can do it today. How, Paul? Be subject to the superior authorities. In that context, the superior authorities have to be evil, or it doesn't make sense. Your subjection to them is the good. That's how you're doing good. You're being subject to an evil authority. That's the exact thing that Jeremiah's letter to the exiles told them to do, be subject to the evil authorities. And again, since the context here is returning evil with good, it doesn't make sense that Paul is giving this as an example if the authorities are not evil. This goes against the popular mottos in Christendom, which say that you are to be subject to authorities until they become evil. As long as they're doing right things, you can be subject to them. But as soon as they become evil and start overstepping the law, start usurping the Constitution, then you're no longer required to be subject to them. But how is that returning good for evil? I can't even do that unless I have evil. Isn't God gracious to build up evil so that I can show it good? Then I score brownie points with God. Ding, 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 ding. Not for salvation, that's free. But for ruling and reigning purposes. I get the great opportunity to show grace. And I can't do it unless I have an evil. And guess what, folks? Today's government is the perfect opportunity for you to show grace by being good to them. All right? And God lets this happen by putting every authority into place where it is. Going to get into the nuts and bolts of that. And guess who else is? Our friend Nebuchadnezzar. We're going to delve into his mind here in Romans 13, because this is the things he's thinking. He doesn't even know it. Paul hasn't even been born yet. Nebuchadnezzar is already getting insight, and he gets it through great trial and great humility. We're going to bring that guy back out of the field after we go into Romans, and we're also going to give you an expectation for the future that our government, which is going to go down into the field, is going to be replaced with the government of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.